Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. With fall fast approaching, the days grow cooler and the nights even colder. For those living unsheltered across Northumberland County, things will become tougher. On today's show, a Brighton councillor is trying to get his municipality to prepare. Jeff Wheeldon wants the town to collaborate with the county to improve services to unsheltered people living in his area. Wheeldon says Brighton's efforts remind everyone about the extent of homelessness across Northumberland. He feels each municipality has a role to play, even if it is a responsibility of the county. Wheeldon is also a member of the Housing and Homeless Task Force. It is a group of politicians from each of the seven municipalities. Its purpose is to share ideas and brainstorm. As you listen, you can figure out how successful Wheeldon and the task force are in searching for solutions. I am so pleased to have with me today Brighton Councillor Jeff Wheeldon. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you, Robert. Always a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us about the motion you recently brought to Brighton Council regarding the lack of emergency shelter for people living in your area?
Sure. I recognized that most county services are located in Cobourg, even though there are outreach services available throughout Northumberland. And I was struck, as I am every September, that, you know, as everyone gets back into the swing of things and school starts, and, you know, it's kind of the Monday of the year. And every year I suddenly remember, oh, we're 2 months away from freezing temperatures. And 2 months is not a lot of time if we need to be preparing for emergency shelter. And I remembered a few years back, actually it was just last Christmas, that I was at 3 a.m. on Christmas morning, sitting with people at the community center because they had been stranded in an emergency. And so the comment I made at the meeting was, we pull out all the stops to help people in an emergency, and we are rightly proud of ourselves for doing so. But for someone who is unsheltered, every day in the winter is an emergency. So I wanted to make sure that if we were in a position where there were people who were not able to get to Cobourg or who were not able to find other shelter, that we had some kind of arrangement with the county in place that we could provide some kind of shelter, even on a temporary emergency basis. So that was what was really driving my motion.
Can you describe the current situation in Brighton when it comes to people living unsheltered?
Sure. Brighton does not have the same level of visible homelessness as other places in Northumberland County. We do have a few people who are living unsheltered, noticeably within our community, just a handful. Usually Brighton gets more over the summer. Some people come out to Presque Isle or Proctor Park and hang out there. And usually we don't necessarily see them through the winter because they have to find somewhere else to go. Again, because we don't have a warming room, we don't have an emergency shelter here. So for the most part, Brighton is fairly insulated from the conversation about visible homelessness in Northumberland County. And I recognize that as a privilege that I have, that I can have this conversation around a council table that is not necessarily going to have as much feedback from the community in terms of the high emotion that we've seen in some other council tables. And so I feel like this gives me an opportunity and maybe a duty to be proactive about this issue and make sure that if we're going to take steps on this, we do it before it gets too politically hot.
For people who may not be familiar with Brighton, what is Proctor Park?
Proctor Park is actually owned by Lower Trent Conservation Authority, but it is within Brighton's urban area. And so it's a great big green space. There's lots of wonderful trails there. There's the historic Proctor House, which is operated by our Heritage Committee as a museum. And there is a pavilion there. Unfortunately, the pavilion is has seen much better days and is no longer really safe. So after Applefest, that's going to have to come down. And there were some comments made that it's a shame that has to come down because it's providing some shelter for people who need shelter. And then that is where some people have been staying. But the reality is that Lower Trent Conservation Authority, as all conservation authorities that I'm aware of, does evict people who are sleeping rough within their conservation areas. And so it's not actually a shelter for people who need shelter, unfortunately.
Who has jurisdiction in these cases then?
Well, if they are within Proctor Park, then that is Conservation Authority land. And so the CA does send out staff members to maintain conservation areas. And I'm on the board of Lower Trent, and I have to say I'm very proud of the way that Lower Trent staff have handled this issue. They've been very kind and respectful, and they've gone out of their way to make sure that they're not being too forceful with people, but just having conversations with people and even holding their stuff for a period of time. So I'm really proud of the way they've handled it, but I don't believe that they have the same responsibilities towards human rights that municipalities do with regard to the Supreme or Superior Court decisions of last year in Waterloo and Kingston that said that municipalities cannot evict people who are sleeping rough in municipal land. I don't think that applies to conservation authorities. And so if people do get evicted from Proctor Park, that is legal. And if they need somewhere else to go, Brighton doesn't actually have a lot of parkland where someone might try to shelter themselves. We rely a lot on Proctor Park and Presque Isle, which is provincial property, for our own parks and recreation. And so I wanted to make sure that if somebody did get evicted from Proctor Park and they were not able to get somewhere else, that we would have at least someone to call. And thankfully we do.
Are there any cases of people living unsheltered that might be highly visible or on public property?
To my knowledge, there are no cases of people who are living visibly on public property. That said, there are a few people who I got a call yesterday from a resident saying there are a couple of guys who are basically living on at a table in Memorial Park, which is right downtown Brighton, for the last several days. Now, they're not sleeping there, to my knowledge, but they have been hanging out there. And so I was able to reach out to the outreach workers from Northumberland County and Northumberland Hills Hospital and just let them know that these guys are here. Maybe they don't know about the services that are available to them. And that's honestly the best that we can do. I had to tell the resident that, you know, there's no bylaw to be enforced. There's no they haven't done anything wrong. And the resident assured me, no, I just want to make sure that they are supported. And so that was really good to hear, because oftentimes when we hear about people calling authorities or counselors about people who are experiencing homelessness, it's much more about, I feel unsafe and we need to get rid of these people. And that feeling is understandable, but it doesn't follow that anyone has done anything wrong. So I was glad to have that positive interaction with a local resident here.
So what is it you want to see done? What forms of support do you think Brighton should offer?
Well, my thought had been that it would be nice if we had some capacity for a warming room in Brighton. Not necessarily even to have it open and operating, but understanding that if something happens, we need to be ready to act. Because the reality is, I'm very aware that Northumberland County does not have the resources to run warming rooms and or emergency shelters in every municipality in Northumberland. That's not practical, unfortunately. And so what I want is to make sure that there's a backup plan. And I think that there is, in terms of not only are there outreach workers in our community that frankly I didn't know about, but also that that we have now this open communication. Our staff know that it's a priority for council to be in communication with the county about this and to have an open door to collaboration with them. And so if there did need to be a backup plan, I think that we would probably be the first ones they would call. And I wanted to make sure that that offer was on the table, because I know the political climate around this issue has been hot lately, and I'm hoping that we can reduce the temperature a little bit.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you next, because this idea of collaboration, you just had an incident, which you described to us. How do you know that the county followed through, or that the mental health people followed through?
That is one of the challenges that we see most often. And I remember dealing with this quite a lot when I was on the board of Transition House as well. People will bring us an issue or a concern about a resident or someone who doesn't seem to be doing well. And we call in and staff are directed to address this person, but they're not going to follow up with us with a progress report, largely because almost anything that they could say about it would probably violate the privacy of the person involved. And so there's often no feedback or very little feedback about how these things are dealt with. Now, the county does put out statistical reports, as does the shelter, so we can see that they are serving people in terms of the number of people that they serve. But oftentimes what people in the community want to see is a direct response to, did you follow up with that particular person? And I'll be honest, even yesterday when I called in, I didn't get a hold of anybody, so I left a message. Hopefully those outreach workers have followed up with these guys. Had it been an emergency situation, I would have just called the police to make sure that, or EMS services to make sure that somebody was able to respond directly. But it was not an emergency. It was just trying to follow up with someone. And I know that if nobody answers the phone when I call into NHH or County Social Services, it's because they're out working with people. And that's important too.
But how is that a satisfactory response to the public? Because, you know, you're saying you want to coordinate, and I understand the spirit, and you're very articulate in giving us all the sides that you feel are important. But when it comes down to the brass tacks, if you're going to be making a phone call and you don't know if there's been any follow-up, or it just disappears into the ether, how is that being accountable, both from your standpoint and from the county standpoint?
I understand, and I agree that that's a serious challenge, and it's something that I really hope that we can improve. When I brought the motion the other night, we actually got a response already on Monday night, and it was more or less that here's a list of all of the things that the county is already doing and the phone numbers of people you can call, etc. There were things on that list that I didn't know about, even though I've been a counselor for 2 years and working with housing and homelessness issues for many more years than that in this area. So I'm still learning, which suggests to me that there needs to be more communication. And when I get complaints from the public, it's generally about that lack of communication. And so moving forward, more communication and more education is really critical.
But there's also an accountability factor here, that things are getting done. It's nice that everybody's talking, but when it comes down to brass tacks, we're talking about people, we're talking about shelter, we're talking about their lives being endangered, all these things. Surely, as politicians, you have to be accountable, and so does the bureaucracy.
Yes, and the question becomes, who are we accountable to? And with regard to the social service workers, outreach workers, they are accountable to the social services system. They are not accountable to anyone who just picks up a phone. And that's not satisfying from the perspective of the person who did pick up the phone. And I understand that. And I think that that lack of satisfaction is valid, frankly. But often I have been challenged with this question, and people say, well, we didn't even know that anything happened. They didn't even follow up. And so we assume that nothing happened, or we assume that something bad happened. And it can escalate in the rhetoric and the way people think about it very quickly, to the point where sometimes people even become somewhat radicalized because they feel that the whole system is broken simply because they haven't heard back. And I that's something that I'm trying to emphasize when I do connect with the county on this. And the kind of thing that the task force is supposed to help alleviate.
We'll talk about this task force that you just referenced in a minute, and I will come back to it. But before we do that, do you have any idea of the number of people who are living unsheltered in your community?
It's hard to say in Brighton. I mean, when Northumberland County does a head count, it's once a year they go out and go to all the places that people experiencing homelessness are known to frequent, and they try to get a good count. But the reality is that people who have no home are very often very transient, sometimes because they can go wherever they want, and sometimes because they are pushed out of wherever they were. So to get an accurate headcount is very difficult. In Brighton, I would say that we are more transient in that respect than Coburg, because we don't have services that would keep people anchored here. And so at any given time, I would say we have three or four people who are living rough, and probably twice that many who are under-sheltered. They're living precariously. And that's an off the top of my head estimate, just based on the fact that we know that there's usually quite a few more people who are housed precariously for every visible homeless person.
In the debate, though, at your September 3rd council meeting, when you introduced this motion, you characterized the situation as it's getting worse. Again, what evidence do you have for this?
Well, last year at this time, I would have told you that that I didn't know of any visible homeless people, and now I know of three or four. So for Brighton, that's a big jump. And I also know, based on the number of questions I get from people who I am known to care about this issue, and I'm also known to be a realtor, and so people know I have access to real estate databases, and so they sometimes send me a text saying, "This property here, do you think we could, you know, is this a place that is owned by a town or a county, or is this conservation authority land?" Because there are people who are looking for where they will go next. If they get pushed out of this place, they need to find another place. Now, I never advise people to break the law or camp illegally or anything like that, but I am very aware that that people are looking for more places to go. And I'm also very aware of recent comments from politicians in other communities suggesting that they come here to Brighton. And I thought, well, if people are going to try and back that up with action, we should be prepared.
You also said during the meeting that you were aware there are people from Brighton sheltering in Coburg. How is that?
I probably shouldn't say that as a fact. That's an assumption based on the fact that when somebody is unsheltered in any community, typically they are from that community. And when somebody needs access to shelter, we are told to call an outreach worker who's going to come out from Coburg and perhaps transport that person to emergency shelter in Coburg. Now, I know that their practice is to try and divert someone to other housing in their own community first, but the odds are very good that there is somebody from every Northumberland community staying in Coburg because they need access to emergency shelter.
Right now, there are people in Coburg, including the mayor, who are very upset with the way the county is handling the issue of homelessness in its jurisdiction. Based on their concerns, the concerns of some Coburg residents, why are you anxious to partner with the county to provide services?
Well, when I advocate for improved social services, over the last several years, I've had people from Coburg tell me quite blatantly on social media and sometimes in other places that it's not my business because I don't live in Coburg. And I have to tell them, you know, it is my business because some of these people are Brighton residents, but also Coburg is where the services that my residents and my neighbors rely on. And that's a function of it being the county seat. So every municipality in Northumberland has a stake in what's happening in Coburg. It's not just a Coburg issue. That said, we all also support the work that is done in Coburg through our tax levies. And so we are all invested in what county social services are doing there. So it's definitely not just a Coburg issue, and it's not just a Coburg versus Northumberland County issue. All of the member municipalities and all of the residents of them are invested in this issue. And it's understandable that people are upset about what they are seeing. Seeing a human being, one of our neighbors, one of us, who is in a position of extreme vulnerability, should be distressing to us. And so I understand why people feel upset. It's a good thing that they feel upset. It should not follow that we try to push those people out. And also, it should not follow that we can blame the county, who is the active agent in trying to address this, when the same issues are becoming more and more extreme everywhere. This is not just a Northumberland problem. It's not as though county social services are doing a bad job. They're doing as good of a job as anyone anywhere. And we're working hard to do a better job because the need is increasing.
I understand you are part of the Housing and Homeless Task Force. This is what you referenced earlier. Mm-hmm. What is this?
Sure. It's a bit of an odd duck when it comes to municipal things, because it is a freestanding task force. It started with a motion that I brought to Brighton Council last year that initiated this, and we circulated that motion to every other municipality in Northumberland, including the county, and it has since then passed in every municipality, including the county. And so there are representatives from all of these governments that meet once a month. We're meeting again tomorrow morning. We are not a committee of any municipality. We're not a committee of the council. We have no votes. We have no budget. We have no staff. We're basically volunteers who say we need to get better at talking about this and overcoming some of the jurisdictional divides. The idea for it came a few years ago before I was on council, when Coburg and the county were talking about this issue. There had been a motion brought to Coburg Council to try and ask the question, should we be evicting people from our parks? And Coburg staff had said, well, actually, it's going to cost us more money if we don't enforce our parks bylaw, and it's going to give us legal liabilities, insurance liabilities, etc. And so rather than voting to not enforce their bylaw and allow people to shelter in peace, they instead brought a delegation to county council. And at county council, the county council decided that there was nothing more that could be done. And what I noticed watching that meeting was that this jurisdictional divide, wherein the pain points of homelessness, invisible homelessness, are being felt at the lower tier, but responsibility for it is being felt at the upper tier, led to a bit of a mismatch in terms of what people were doing. And I think that's still at the root of this conflict. And so I thought, we need to get all of these municipal representatives sitting around the same table and making sure that we can have clear communication about what it is that the county does, what it's responsible for, and what lower tiers can contribute, if anything. And so for the most part at these task force meetings, we are just learning about county social services. We're learning about different initiatives that they already have going. We're looking at where can we be more supportive? Where can we get out of your way? Is there more needed? And it's been very eye-opening for a lot of counselors. Not everyone on the task force was an activist about this issue. They were just delegated from their respective councils, but everyone has been contributing. And I'm really excited for the direction we're going in. It's not necessarily resulting in a lot of new initiatives yet, but it is leading to much better opportunities for collaboration, which is why I brought that motion 2 weeks ago.
All of this sounds wonderful for some, but at the same time, you've admitted multiple times that there's nothing concrete coming out of this, and it's just more talk. How is that supposed to make the public feel when this group's meeting, there's no authority, there's no sanction, there's nothing, even if you decided to do something, there's nothing that's going to compel anybody anywhere to take it seriously or do anything? How do you justify that to people who might be cynical about this?
Sure. I understand why people might be cynical about this. I think that, Robert, we've been trained to look for silver bullets. Political rhetoric usually says that problems are simple and solutions are simple. And the reality is, it's actually extremely complex. And one of the complexities is the way that our governments are set up, because every level of government has some stake in this, and we don't coordinate well. And so I also am frustrated that we don't have anything concrete coming out of this in terms of an easy solution. But I also take heart in that it tells me that all of the easy solutions are already being implemented. Anything that can be done is being done. Anything that isn't being done is because there is some kind of disconnect in our system. And that's what this task force is working to overcome. So I don't know if task force is the right word for it. I originally called it some kind of committee. When Coburg passed the motion, they called it a task force. Maybe we should call it a study group. I don't know. But the point is that we don't know how to get better at this if we can't talk to each other well. And what I see outside of the task force is that generally, the levels of government are not talking to each other well on this issue right now. And at the task force table, they are. So if there's going to be any positive developments on this issue in the next little while, at least, I think they're going to come at the task force table. And I'm really proud of that.
I looked at the notes from the last three meetings of this task force. And at the April 10th meeting, the note says, and I'm quoting here, "Some members present have heard from other community agencies and groups who are hesitant to trust lower-tier municipalities, much less work with them, in light of recent events. Part of our role right now is damage control, which is very frustrating and disheartening, but nonetheless a necessary and good purpose for this task force. Building partnerships to address systemic issues is key, even or especially when doing so is difficult." What does all that mean?
It means that sometimes when municipalities enforce their bylaws, they do it in a way that is dehumanizing or violates people's human rights. And I'm not saying that to point the finger at any municipality. I'm sure that all of their staff are doing their best to be respectful. But the reality is that the two rulings last year say that when you evict somebody from the only home they're able to get for themselves on municipal property, that that's a violation of their rights. And so the fact that that has happened over the last few years in Northumberland County has led many groups, I shouldn't say many, at least a few that I'm aware of, to feel that municipalities are not actively seeking the best interests of residents who are experiencing homelessness. And so they wonder if there's any benefit to partnering with municipalities to make things better. And that is disheartening, because I feel like this is an all hands on deck kind of problem. We need people at the table who are not just members of council or county staff. Those are the people who come to the task force table, but we need the input and support and collaboration from community nonprofits. And if those people are cautious about trusting us because they feel that municipalities might say that we support ending homelessness, but then turn around and just evict people from their home and confiscate their belongings, that creates a context of distrust that is hard to move forward in. And that really deprives us of resources, of the people who are often closest to those who need support, because they won't come to us. Now, one of the things that I brought to Brighton Council in this past year was a motion asking us to look at our bylaws and make sure that we don't have any bylaws that are going to infringe on people's human rights in that way, in light of the Waterloo and Kingston decisions that came out last year. And Thankfully, I don't think that we do. I'm still waiting on a staff report back about that. But again, I can't fault municipal workers for enforcing their bylaws. But if their bylaws are indeed in violation of the human rights of people living rough, I think that's one of the things that we need to move towards changing.
Let's take another example. The task force discussed modular housing at its May meeting. What becomes of that discussion?
Well, we discussed modular housing because we were in contact with a consultant in the modular housing industry who was proposing a publicly owned nonprofit housing manufacturing facility. This is a guy who has worked in modular around the world, but he lives in Warkworth, and he believes that within a year he could have a factory set up capable of producing 1,000 units of housing a year. And so I thought that sounds very interesting, a way of accelerating housing builds, maybe getting them cheaper, more efficient. And so what resulted from that was we had a few conversations about it around the task force table. And then I helped these guys bring a delegation to the County Economic Development Committee. And I brought a delegation myself in support of their delegation, asking the county for support for a study that would determine the viability of this kind of facility in Northumberland. And County Act Dev Committee then approved that as a request to bring to County Council. But when it came to County Council, when the warden asked if there was a mover, nobody would move that motion. So that idea died, but we put a lot of work into getting it to that point. And so that was quite disappointing. I don't know why nobody would move it. When nobody moves it, there's no discussion either. So I'm not sure what to say about that part, but we are really trying every option we can. I'm also in discussion right now with some folks from the building community in Northumberland about putting together a housing summit. That's another idea that came out of the task force meetings. We recognize that last year there was a housing summit in Coburg that was mostly about the need for more housing, and it was mostly represented by nonprofits and public sector. And what we recognized is that there were very few builders in the room. And some of our members attended a housing summit in Ottawa last year that was industry focused. And we thought maybe we need to have one of those here. So I've been taking steps recently to partner with the building community to bring politicians and builders together to look at what is it in Northumberland specific to our location that is causing delays, that's causing high costs. How can we do this better? And I'm hopeful that we can get something put together for late fall or early winter.
But if you follow the news at all, developers will always tell you it's the red tape, it's the development charges. I mean, isn't this stuff we already know?
Well, the developers will tell you that, and politicians will tell you that there are already more homes approved for development than there are that are currently under development. And so it is a big, complex issue. And again, one of the things that I'm trying to do is tease out what is the actual process involved here? Where are the actual barriers? Because developers aren't wrong that the red tape can be astronomical. But that's not the only thing that's slowing down housing or making it expensive. And you know, the housing advocates can rightly say that developer share of profits rose during the pandemic. And so it's not just these other things that are making housing more expensive. It's not just development charges. It's not just all of these other things. So everyone has something to offer in terms of perspective. And I don't want to get just the developers around the table, but the builders. And I want to talk about, okay, what's your process? How much is low labor force impacting the cost of your builds? But I also want to get lenders at the table and say, why are your lending policies the way that they are? Because I know that it is easier for a developer to get funding to build a detached home than it is to build an apartment building. And we need more apartment buildings, less detached homes. So how can we expedite that process? Because builders and developers will tell you that their biggest hurdle is getting the financing. So there's lots of moving parts here, and I'm hopeful that if we can get all the right players around the table, we can move them all in the right direction so that they line up a little better.
So what's next for you and Brighton Council when it comes to this dealing with unsheltered people?
Next is more education. I've been talking with County Social Services about possibly getting some education sessions in place for not just Brighton Council, but all councils, so that we can better understand the resources that are available in our communities. As I said, I wasn't aware of the outreach workers in Brighton, and I've been working on this issue for a long time. So if I don't know, who does know? And I know that they've got the cards of the outreach worker behind the counter at the library, but I don't know that even all library staff know who these people are or why they would call them. So that getting that education piece out there and improving communication is what I want to be focusing on for the next little while, because it's important that people in all communities in Northumberland understand that we are not on our own. It's not just that all services are in Cobourg. In fact, services are available to everyone throughout Northumberland. It's just sometimes you might need a ride.
Jeff Wheeldon, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Pleasure, Robert. Thank you.
That was Brighton Councillor Jeff Wheeldon. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.